All right, I got to weigh in on something that has been in the news a lot lately. There's been a great deal of angst coming from the left about the U.S. military getting rid of DEI and enforcing standards. God forbid the military should actually have standards. Only those who have no clue about what the military is for would ever have trouble with that. But for the sake of debate, let me just ask you all a hypothetical question. You ready? Here we go. What if you were being held hostage by terrorists in a foreign land? But you learned that the U.S. government was working on a rescue plan. Okay. The planning and the execution of your rescue would fall to one of two teams. The choice of the team to execute the mission was yet to be determined, but the National Command Authority had authorized a quick reaction force from one of two separate command groups. Okay. Two teams getting geared up. Which one's it going to be? Well, each one of these command groups is authorized to handpick the members of their respective strike force. One commander issued a call for volunteers with combat experience, people who were experts with weapons and communications and medical qualifications. They had to be skilled in survival, hand-to-hand combat, and hostage rescue, and capable of either airborne or waterborne insertions and extractions. Two-thirds of the team had to also be fluent in the language of the area of operations. Basically, we're talking about a bunch of highly skilled Special Mission Unit Tier 1 operators. The other team upon which you may have to rely for your rescue in a foreign land being held by terrorists, well, that commander asked for a strike force that was diverse in its makeup, with equitable distribution in the team makeup reserved for various genders and ethnicities and LGBTQ+ service members, and at least one member of the rescue team had to be transgender. All the team had to be vaccinated and boosted and be able to perform at least a minimum of 60% at least on the passing of the scores for the new Army physical fitness test. Oh, and they had to be, you know, qualified at the basic level in the past year with their assigned weapon. Oh, and foreign language skills, well, those were encouraged, but only if it meant not disturbing the equitable makeup of the team. Oh, and also each member of the diversity team would have to have been evaluated in their past two evaluations as having been compliant with the commander's sexual harassment and equal opportunity programs and have signed a waiver that they were willing to assume the risk of their mission. Now, okay, if you're the hostage and your life depended on one of these two teams getting in to rescue you, you think about it, which team would you want? The best of the best or the diverse of the rest? That's where we are right now. We are putting together the U.S. military that is designed to answer our nation's call and fight our battles, win our wars, defeat our and deter our enemies, and the left wants to make sure it's filled with unicorns and anime characters. Look, I'll submit to you that there has never been a successful recruiting campaign for a hazardous mission that solicited the volunteers to join its ranks because it was a safe place where they would learn how to be compliant and sensitive to the needs of others. I'm going to tell you right now, when I was young and considering my own military path, there was nothing about the allure of becoming a paratrooper, a ranger, a pathfinder, that ever was presented to me as anything less than the understanding that it was an elite, professional, rugged, hard, dangerous, deeply, deeply satisfying opportunity, at the same time designed to be the best at leading others, making decisions under extreme pressure, being the best at killing people and breaking things. And the same should be true of any effort to convince young, red-blooded men and women today to join the armed forces. You tell them you're going to make them soft and they'll blow it off and look elsewhere for their adventure. But you tell them you're going to give them a life of high energy and high yield and high expectations, and they will flock to the recruiter's office, which we, by the way, have been seeing in recent months, haven't we? You may have heard of Sir Ernest Shackleton, the famous explorer who launched a mission to explore Antarctica over a century ago. One write-up that I saw described the outcome of the mission as both a great failure and one of the greatest human achievements ever. When he was looking for men, it is said that Shackleton did not want any gallivanters or dandies. So he ran an ad that said precisely what was needed. The ad reportedly read this. It said, quote, "Men wanted for hazardous journey, low wages, bitter cold, long hours of complete darkness, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition in the event of success." It is listed as one of the top 100 advertisements of all time. And Shackleton said of it afterward that, "So overwhelming was the response to his appeal that it seemed as though all the men of Great Britain were determined to accompany him." Why? I mean, why was that ad so successful? And likewise, why was the Army's Be All You Can Be ad campaign successful? Or the Marines, the few, the proud, the Marines? Why are young Rangers required to memorize the Ranger Creed that tells them that their country expects them to move further, faster, and fight harder than any other soldier? And to be able to say, "Though I be the lone survivor, Rangers lead the way." Look, I say all of that because I found a story yesterday that I'd never heard of. It was a story of exactly what I'm describing. It's a story of a man who got it. A man who understood the mission and the times that he was serving in. A man who did something heroic, and he did it because he was committed 110% to the idea that if he did not do it, someone else would have to pay the price. A man who chose the rugged path, no matter what the odds. And I learned about the story because President Ronald Reagan had found it so impressive that he apparently included it in his 1981 inaugural address to the nation. The man I'm talking about was a private in the 168th Infantry in World War I. The 167th Infantry Regiment, along with Alabama's own 167th Infantry, became legendary subordinate units of the U.S. Army's 42nd Infantry Division. That 42nd Infantry Division was known as the Rainbow Division, by the way. It wore a rainbow patch on their uniforms. They were called this because they were the original version of diversity, if you get down to it. You see, the 42nd Division, the Rainbow Division, was formed out of volunteers and guardsmen from all over America and brought together to form one cohesive unit. It was like all the colors of the rainbow formed together. It was farm boys from Alabama fighting next to city slickers from New York, and they became legends on the battlefields of France. They threw themselves against the enemy so completely that the 42nd Division is said to have been one of the deciding forces in the turning of the war. At the end of it all, though, the 42nd Division, they had to cut their patch in half. They did. They chose to. They cut their patch in half because they had left so many of their brothers on the battlefield. And to this day, that Rainbow Division patch is still seen, still worn, and it's half of a rainbow. There's a statue erected in their honor in Montgomery. The Rainbow Viaduct still exists in Birmingham, named after them. And Rainbow City, Alabama, was named after that unit. But the man I want to tell you about today was one of their privates, and his name was Martin Treptow. Martin August Treptow. He was raised on a farm in the town of Eagle Point, Wisconsin. In the summer of 1917, Martin Treptow was working as a barber in a small shop in the town of Cherokee, Iowa. When the call went out for volunteers, Martin enlisted in the Army. And on July 29, 1918, Private Treptow was serving on the Western Front with Company M, 168th Infantry, 84th Brigade, 42nd Division. The Rainbow Division had been in the thickest of the fight, and the battle in which they were engaged that day was at Chateau Thierry. It wound up being recorded in history as one of the most important battles of World War I. Well, at one point, a messenger was needed to deliver an important message to one of the company's platoons. In spite of the heavy machine gun and artillery fire, Private Treptow, then just 24 years of age, he volunteered, he grabbed the message, and he ran out under fire. And as he was nearing the platoon leader, Treptow was actually killed by a hail of machine gun fire. But later, they found his diary. And on the first page, he had written something he titled, My Pledge. It had a dramatic impact on the members of his unit. So many of them read it that they began to write it in their own diaries. It became known as the Treptow Pledge. And it was entered into the congressional record after the war. It was later quoted by President Ronald Reagan. And here's what it said. Listen to this. The Treptow Pledge. He wrote, America must win this war. Therefore, I will work, I will save, I will sacrifice, I will endure, I will fight cheerfully and do my utmost as if the issue of the whole struggle depended on me alone. You see, Martin Treptow got it. A man like that is who I want on any team coming to save me, I'll tell you. That's the burning heart of a warrior who is willing to give more than he gets. And I'm telling you, if we will tell young Americans that a life of derring do awaits them, they will beat down the door to be a part of it. But if we tell them that we will give them the ability to be more sensitive, more understanding, more compliant, then we as a nation are going to be lost to history. So yeah, returning to my analogy of the hostage and the two hand-picked teams, if I were the hostage and I knew my life and my freedom were at stake, I'd want the best of the best coming to get me, wouldn't you? The sensitive team, they could stay home and play tea party for all I care. America needs and deserves the best of the best serving in our uniform. That's all that matters. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.